righty, rocking and rolling. Hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm going to say it for this weekend in the NFL. The team with the most pressure on them are actually the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, here's your Sunday slate. In London at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time, you have the Jets and the Vikings. You have the Panthers at the Bears. That's at 1 o'clock. This is the 1 o'clock window now. You have Miami at New England. Cleveland at Washington. Indy at Jacksonville. Buffalo at Houston. And then you get to the 4 or 5 p.m. Eastern time window. Raiders at Denver. Arizona at San Francisco. Green Bay at the Rams. The Giants at Seattle. And then your Sunday night game is Cowboys at the Steelers. And then obviously on Monday, you do have the Saints and the Kansas City Chiefs. But yeah, the team that I think is under the most pressure this weekend are the Cincinnati Bengals. Because it's weird. The Bengals are the team that everyone gives the benefit of the doubt to. Like, they're 1-3, or even when they were 0-2, oh, they're going to find a way. They'll turn it around. That's a team we've seen before start slow and find a way to turn their season around. You know, it happened in 2022 when we saw that football team start off 0-2 and then they lose in the AFC Championship game. Even last year, that team started 0-2. I know they missed the postseason, but they ended up being a 9-8 football team. And even in the year they got to the Super Bowl, you know, I know they got a victory in week one, but that team was 1-1 after 2 weeks losing to Chicago. And they found a way to go march on to the Super Bowl that year. And if they could have just got a second more or half second more up against Aaron Donald blocking him, you would have had Joe Burrow hitting Ja'Marr Chase down the right sideline. So I get why there's belief in Cincinnati. And it's because of the fact what they have displayed with how unmovable this force is with the Kansas City Chiefs. They've been the only team that has defeated the Chiefs when it has mattered the most, with Tom Brady no longer being a part of the NFL as a player in the postseason. They've been the only team to do so. So when you've been the only team to do so, we kind of really look at you and say, okay, even though it's a slow start, even though you were 0-3 and you had a very victory up against the Carolina Panthers, where I wasn't even blown away with that performance. I know the final score looks nice, 34-24, but that game was close for a while. There's still that belief and benefit of the doubt that the Bengals, as long as they just get an invite to the dance, they're going to have a chance to go on home with the prom queen. That's kind of the way that a lot of people look at the Cincinnati Bengals. And even if they lose this game to the Ravens, they'll be 1-4, but I bet you people will say, oh, they'll beat the Giants, and they'll beat Cleveland, and then they'll be 3-4, and the season is saved. If Cincinnati wants me to actually have a reason to believe in them for what they're doing on the field, not in 2023 or 2022 or 2021, I'm talking this season, in 2024, they need to go on out there this weekend, Sunday, 1 o'clock, at their home turf. And I'm not saying they need to blow out the Ravens, because the Ravens are a heck of a team with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, and you got John Harbaugh. We know what the Ravens are capable of. They were about to beat the snot out of the Cowboys, and they let them back in the game. And then just this past week, the Bills at times have looked like the best team in the NFL, and they just smothered the Buffalo Bills for 60 minutes. So I'm not going to sit here and be that dope that goes, oh, the Bengals, they got to blow out the Ravens. They're going to blow them out. No, I'm not going to do that. Stupid. It sounds stupid. The Bengals just got to win, though, this week. I don't care if it's pretty. I don't care if it's ugly. They just got to win. The Bengals just got to win. Like, if they win this game 14-10, I'm not going to get on the radio on Monday when we sign on right at 3 p.m. Eastern time and go, eh, Cincinnati, they won, but it wasn't a pretty win, so there's still no reason to believe. But this is a big test going up against a big team in your division, a team that won the division last year and was the number one overall seed in the AFC, and you got to beat them. I don't want to hear about T. Higgins' future. I don't want to hear about Ja'Marr Chase not getting a contract. You know, them no longer having Joe Mixon and Moss, and look at the performance Brown had last week. You know, this defense, I don't even know what to expect out of this defense. Because in week two, that defense was phenomenal up against Mahomes. How Trey Hendrickson didn't win that game, it's almost criminal and a disservice to Trey Hendrickson. But since then, you know, they didn't really get it. I know they only allowed 16 points to the Patriots in week one, but they didn't get a rush on this Patriots offensive line, which is garbage. And then up against the Commanders, I know Jaden Daniels is a really good quarterback, and I believe he's the franchise quarterback for the Commanders. But they made Jaden Daniels look like he was a 10-year pro that has already made 8 first-team All-Pro seasons and already has 3 Super Bowls under his belt. And up against Carolina, they won the game. That's the objective. But it wasn't like I was blown away by that defensive performance by the Cincinnati Bengals. So this is a game where it's a great measuring stick for the Bengals. Because we look at the Bengals, and the Bengals are the team that even after this sloppy start, the Bengals are a team that they're 1-3 and people are still believing in them. Because it's a belief based off things that have happened in the past where they have been the team that has played Kansas City the best. Okay? That's what it is. But that belief level and that benefit of the doubt quickly fades away when you don't turn it around. And here's what I know about Baltimore. They're going to be able to run the ball, and there will be moments to vertically throw the ball down the field, whether you hit Likely or Zay Flowers or if Mark Andrews could catch the ball, but they're going to try to beat you up not knowing where the football is going to go between Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and how tough that is to defend that 1-2 punch. But Baltimore has the capability of scoring a lot of points. So when you look at Cincinnati, and usually these AFC North games that are tight, Cincinnati's defense has an opportunity to show us, hey, we're more of the defense up against Kansas City than we've been up against, you know, than the way that we displayed we were in week three up against the Commanders. Because you know there will be a moment in this game where the Ravens get the ball in the end zone. Like, if you walk into this game and say, no, the Ravens are not going to score a touchdown, you know, I got a bridge to sell you, all right? After the show, just meet me right outside the studio. I'll get all the paperwork done. Just make sure you bring me the cash. I'll take the cash, and then I'll bring you back the paperwork in about an hour from now. So the Ravens have the capability of putting up a lot of points. So I got to see this Lou Anarumo defense, which has been really the only defense to have the code to solve Mahomes, start solving the code against other teams. And then for Joe Burrow, yeah, I know you're not 100%, but all those excuses are out the window. This is a Ravens defense. It's not as great as it's been in years past. You know, I know you have the change at defense coordinator, but it's still a good Ravens defense. And this Ravens defense and this Ravens team, you know, going into the season, I think a lot of people, I had them being my pick coming out of the AFC to win the Super Bowl, but I think a lot of people looked at this Ravens team going into the season, they're like, yeah, they're going to be good, but I'm not going to believe in them. Because we just believed in them last year, and they had that great regular season, and it didn't even get them to go to the Super Bowl. And as much as we talked about the Bengals' poor start, the Ravens also had a poor start too. Likely couldn't get that extra foot down, that extra toe down. And then they had that big lead up against Stu's Raiders, and then the Raiders came on back, and it knocked me out of my survivor pool. But then since, they, for 3 quarters, dominated the Cowboys, and then for 60 minutes, just dominated the Buffalo Bills. So that's a Ravens team and a Bengals team that were in similar spots. The Ravens have turned around the narrative. Now it's up to the Cincinnati Bengals to turn around their narrative. Because the narrative that's being jammed down our throats right now is that, don't worry, this is what Cincinnati does. Don't worry, Cincinnati's going to get going. Don't worry, Cincinnati will eventually be the team. They'll be ready to take down the Chiefs' kingdom, and they'll dethrone Patrick Mahomes. But all that stuff in the past is obviously from previous years. So they're nice memories. They're nice thoughts. But each and every year in the NFL is a different year. So now I need to start seeing something tangible, something that I could pick up and hold on to and say, oh, a win up against the Ravens. That's something I got right here. So now I could hold on to that, you know, crumple it up. Let me see what I'm crumpling up here. Hopefully I didn't just crumple up something I need in the next 50 minutes. Ah, just the show rundown. Who needs that anyway? And you secure that right in your pocket. And you stash it away. And if they could beat the Ravens this weekend, the Bengals, I think it changes the entire Bengal season. But if they lose, I don't want to hear people on Monday saying, hey, you know, Cincinnati has been here before. You know, Cincinnati's now 1-4. They'll dig themselves out of this hole based off what? Because it's one thing to be 0-2. It's one thing to be 0-3. When you get to 1-4, yeah. I'm not going down into the foxhole with you at 1-4. I'm not. I'm not believing that you're going to lead me out of the foxhole and get me back to my home base. Just not. I need to start seeing the Bengals of the past, the way that we talk about the Bengals, be the Bengals of the present. Because if they are not on Sunday up against the Ravens, the Bengals of the future for this season are going to be a football team that underachieves. And at the end of the year, we're going to be talking about Zach Taylor. And we're going to be talking about him potentially getting fired and T. Higgins being on a different team. Oh, well, does this give Ja'Marr Chase an out even though he's BFFs with Joe Burrow? Does this give him a way to say, okay, I'm out on Cincinnati? Even though I love you, Joe, and you just got paid by the team, and I don't really like how the team toyed around with me, so now I'm going to go elsewhere. I'm going to go to a bigger market. There's a lot on the line for Cincinnati this year. And you hate to be that team that was dubbed the team, and you don't get that trophy. So this weekend, you can look at all the matchups. To me, the Bengals season is on life support. But there's still hope. You didn't get a diagnosis of, hey, you're definitely done. But when we look at the Bengals, if they spend another week in the loser column, and it be this weekend up against the Ravens, I can't give you, even though I'm trying to be optimistic today, and all happy-go-lucky today. On Monday, you will not be getting an optimistic Zach Gelb when it comes talking to the Cincinnati Bengals. So, Stu, I'll ask you this. I usually have a feel in all these games. I usually have an opinion. My opinion is the Bengals have to win the game. My opinion isn't they will win the game, though. Like, this is one of those games. And I hate to be that dude on the radio that goes, oh, it's a coin flip, because that's like boring radio that I hate. But this is a game where if you ask me it 15 times this week, one day or 1 hour, I'll tell you it's the Ravens. The next hour, I'll tell you that it's the Cincinnati Bengals. I think this is the toughest game to predict this weekend. If you put a gun to my head, I would not feel good about whatever answer I give you. But I'm going to say it's the Bengals because they need it more. And also, isn't it just the NFL? The Ravens now, everyone's kind of stroking them. Oh, look what they just did. They blew out the Buffalo Bills, primetime spot. It's awesome. It's phenomenal. It's sensational. And then usually that team, when you go up against a good team, even though they haven't played like a good team this year in the Cincinnati Bengals, that team finds a way to kind of put a dent in the armor of the way that we just talked up the Ravens for the entirety of the week. So, gun to my head, begrudgingly, wouldn't feel good about it, I would take the Cincinnati Bengals. How about you?
I think the Ravens.
Okay.
I just get these weird vibes from the Bengals. And I know they're at home. I know, like, what you just said, like, they need the game more. The Ravens coming off that big win Sunday night. But I just have such weird vibes about this team right now. And they'll probably get to a point where they're in contention for the playoffs. Even at 1-4, they could still, you know, crawl their way back. But I don't know. I just have a feeling the Ravens are going to win this one.
It does seem funky.
Yeah.
There are some funky vibes around the Bengals. But I still feel like the majority of the world believes, like the majority of football fans believe, that they're going to find a way to be there or be close in striking distance to the finish line at the end of the year with the chance to be the first person to cross that finish line. And with what I've seen so far, I can't go there. Because, like, the first 4 weeks of the season, if things don't go the way that it plays out, okay, you could still permeate that belief that things will turn around. Once you get through week five and you show me 5 weeks of more you being a bad football team than a good football team, I'm not going to sit here and then all of a sudden say, oh, yeah, now this is a team that I still believe in. No, you then lose my belief. So Cincinnati better get the job done this weekend, or to me, season is over. That's the way that I look at it. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a timeout. Pat McCarthy will join us on the other side, is a Mets radio announcer, also someone that I've known since my time working in the Princeton area. How about that? And he's also a big NFL fan, so he'll join us for NFL picks next. I've known Pat McCarthy for a bunch of years, actually going back to when he was at Princeton, which he's still a part of that program, and I was doing a local AM radio show in a station that doesn't even exist anymore in a sports format called 920 AM The Jersey. And obviously I know Pat's father, Tom, who actually got me the job at 920 The Jersey, and I didn't even know about it because he recommended me for the job. And then when I went into interview, they're like, oh, you got a really nice recommendation. I'm like, I didn't even give you my references yet. And it was Tom McCarthy who actually recommended me for that job, because I guess he did that job many, many years ago when he was first getting started. Now Pat is a superstar on the Mets Radio Network, on Mets Radio 880, and he's also still a huge sports fan outside of Major League Baseball, so he'll do NFL picks with us today. But Pat, man, that was something last night. You know, I've hit a wall now during the show, and I know it's probably worse for you because I actually could go to sleep. You had to get on the flight back. But geez, I didn't go to bed. I don't even know. I want to say like 2 in the morning. And then the last segment, I'm sitting here and I'm like, uh-oh, the eyes are starting to shut because I didn't get much sleep last night. But that was really something with the Mets.
Yeah, Zach, it was insane. And I got to Philadelphia around 4 o'clock in the morning. That's when the team probably landed. And I'm sitting there and I was going to come home either way. And I'm like, man, I'm so wired at this point. I feel like I should just go home right now rather than get any kind of shut-eye. I did decide to get about 2 hours before I trained home this morning. But either way, it's been one unbelievable ride for this team. And I think last night was just the perfect way for this run to continue. Because I talked with Sean Manaea about this yesterday in the clubhouse, that it just wasn't right that the season was going to end on a 2-0 shutout on a couple of home runs by Jake Bowers and Sal Frelick. Like, that just, there's no way that that's how this season was supposed to end. So for Pete to come up in that situation and hit that home run in what could have very likely been his last at bat as a New York Met, it's pretty special.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest, like, I'm a huge Pete Alonso fan. I've been trying to support him all throughout the season. I kind of feel like I've been a defender. When you had the drop ball last night, and I've always highlighted how better of a fielder he is than he gets credit for, and you've seen some of the other at-bats, I'm like, that's it for Pete. Like, the Mets aren't going to pay him this offseason. This is going to be it. And when he hit that home run, oh, man, I let out a scream in my apartment that I think I probably got a noise complaint for it when I get back to my apartment later today. Because I was just going nuts, and then I literally froze up because I was so excited. I just could not speak after that and basically blacked out for the rest of the game. And to be clear, I was completely sober. I was sober, but I emotionally blacked out. So when you see Pete get into the box, we all know it's now or never for Alonso. What's on the line? When that ball goes over the right field wall and you know that it's now Mets 3, Brewers 2 in a swing of a bat, how did you kind of process it?
Yeah, so I was in the back of the booth in Milwaukee with our engineer, Chris Majkowski, and I had to get set up to go downstairs just in case anything happened, but I wasn't going to do it unless there was an actual opportunity there. I wasn't going to get my hopes up. And because for game 2, I was all prepared. I had all of my wet clothes on to go downstairs and celebrate. And I'm like, all right, I got to reverse this jinx a little bit. So as soon as Brandon Nimmo got the base hit, I'm like, okay, something's starting to brew here. So I went to the back of the booth, went into my suitcase, started pulling out my wet clothes. And I just look up right before the pitch comes in and he hits it. And I just yelled, get legs. as soon as the ball left his bat, and then at that point, I threw on my headset, got on my mics and my packs ready to go, and I sprinted out of the booth, and Steve Gelbs and I we just met in the press box, and the two of us just beelined down to the basement area so that we could get onto the field as fast as we could. It was a surreal moment, but it was the perfect moment.
And obviously the Mets go on to win the game. Peterson comes in seven pitches, and then they're going to Philadelphia, or they're making their way back to New York, and then they'll go to Philadelphia. What was that flight like on the way back? Just wondering if you could give us a little insight.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I know the video has been circulating of that they played Howie's call over the PA system and Howie got up. Everybody cheered for him, and he and Pete embraced in the back of the plane. It was pretty special. But at the same time, it was kind of business as usual, because I think this team is exhausted. I think that they need this off day, because who wouldn't be tired emotionally, physically, after the run that they've went on? So it wasn't anything. It wasn't insane. It wasn't any. It wasn't the stories of the 86 Mets trashing the back of the plane or anything like that. They had a good time. They all hung out, but it was definitely business as usual. But it was a very, very happy flight. People weren't really sleeping. I don't know how you could, even if you tried. A lot of smiles, a lot of laughs, and I just think they're all just ready for this ride to continue.
And when I go back and watch all these replays, Pat McCarthy, you see the scream that Pete lets out originally. Yeah. And Pete hasn't wavered the entire season. He wouldn't admit that he's feeling the pressure and that it's getting to him. But that one swing of a bat, I think it just took the monkey off his back. And now that the Mets are still playing, like, I don't know if they'll win this series up against Philadelphia, but now I have like a dangerous amount of confidence that Pete Alonso is coming to play, and he's coming to smash in Philly.
Yeah, and I think it has to be a massive relief off Pete's back, because as you said, no matter what happens the rest of the way, he had his moment, and nobody can take that moment away from him. He stepped up in what was the biggest at-bat in his Mets career, and he came through. Pete's not going to tell you that this has been a disappointing season, because that's just not Pete's personality. But everybody knows it's not the season that Pete had hoped for, not the way that he wanted to potentially go out if this is his last turn with the New York Mets. But he stepped up, and now I think he can kind of play free. I would hope that this is just a massive load off his shoulders, and now he can go out in Philadelphia and have a lot of fun and have some success and help this team get to the National League Championship Series.
For you personally, we know your dad has been the voice of the Mets in the past, but he is known as being the TV voice and the TV guy for the Philadelphia Phillies and NBC Sports Philadelphia. You now have crafted out and carved out a little cool role here, being a part of this Mets booth as well. For you personally and your family, what is this series like with now, I guess, your dad's Phillies and the Mets that you broadcast going up against one another?
Yeah, I will say my family has been very supportive during this entire thing. It's been actually really cool for that. They've all watched every single game. And I mean, it's no secret, they're all Phillies fans.
Yeah.
And the fact is they have hung on every single pitch, and they've been loving every second of it. I think my wife is the one that's more conflicted than anybody, as she's starting to make the full-on transition into being a Mets fan. But it's been a lot of fun right now. And we've had some pretty cool experiences over the last 3 years now, whether that was when I was working with him in the Phillies broadcast booth or last year when I first got the Mets job. We had London this year. I just think this is going to be a completely different animal heading into this series. I'm going to enjoy every second of it, because, and Zach, you know this, that it's such a unique opportunity to share this type of passion with your dad, and I'm just going to soak up every moment of it.
Matt, it's going to be awesome, and it'd also be great if you're able to tell your dad at the end of the series, I'm going to broadcast in the NLCS. You've got enough of those dads. Yeah. Let me go have my moment now. That's what I'm hoping
exactly.
for.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So Pat McCarthy is here with us. Now we will get to some NFL picks. Stu, hit the music. All righty, so we do a few minutes talking about the crazy Met game last night with Pat McCarthy. Now let's get to NFL picks. Pat, I will let you go first here. What's the first game that you look at and the spread that you want to go with this week?
All right, Zach, I have to be honest with you. I have not really paid attention to the NFL at all this season.
Well, you know what? I need the help because the guest pickers have been kicking my ass, so I hope you are 0-3. That's what I hope.
All right, good. So I did my best to try and get some picks that I thought would come through. So I'm going to go with the Browns plus 3.5 against the Commanders. Now, I know that Jaden Daniels has been playing at an MVP caliber level over the last couple of weeks, but I just think at a certain point he's just going to have to come down back to earth. And Deshaun Watson played pretty well last week, so I do think that the Browns are going to give the Commanders a little bit of a scare there. We'll go Raiders plus 3.5 at the Broncos, and then the final one will go Bears minus 4 against the Panthers. Number one, I think Caleb Williams is just going to continue to get better as the season goes along, as he gets more snaps. He's got so many weapons on the outside. I do think eventually they're going to get DeAndre Swift going. And I mean, the Panthers right now, there's so much turmoil going on right there. And I don't know how long Andy Dalton can kind of keep things going in that position. So those are the picks that we're going to go with.
All righty. So Pat McCarthy's going to go with the Browns plus 3.5, the Raiders plus 3.5, and the Bears minus 4. And I actually have someone here, Pat, that wants to say hello to you. So can that mystery person that's sitting to my left that I don't think got in the shot yet say hello to one Pat McCarthy?
Long time no speak.
Ack, what's up, brother?
How are you?
How are
good
you,
to
my
hear
friend?
Your voice again and see you as well. You have recovered nicely from that. You have recovered nicely from the locker room last night, Pat, handling the post game in the locker room. And did you get doused a lot?
You know, I stayed dry yesterday, Ack. I don't know how it happened. I fully prepared. I got soaked in Atlanta, just absolutely drenched, and I was not prepared. So 2 days ago in Milwaukee, I went to a TJ Maxx, and I found a $16, like, Quicksilver, like, raincoat-style thing.
Yeah.
And what a steal. $120 originally priced. I got it for $16. Shout out to TJ Maxx. And I didn't even need it. Ridiculous.
You know what? You play-by-play guys, you're such snobs. Go into the locker room. You get doused in champagne.
No, I'm with
it's
him on that.
It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, but
I've done it before.
But you got to get on the plane soaked. You have to have a change of clothes. You're still, you know, the champagne gets sticky. I'm with Pat on this one. You got to stay dry. You got to stay clean.
All right, Pat, once the responsibilities were done, though, and you got to celebrate a little bit, what was the celebration like for one Pat McCarthy? Did you drink a little bit? Did you have a little smoke or something on the plane? What were we doing?
Well, those that know me know that I am a very, very big IPA person. So I got on the plane last night. I had a nice Voodoo Ranger, and then honestly, I fell asleep. So no, I only had one last night. I got a fresh keg of Oktoberfest downstairs, though, that I'm sure going to be I'm going to tap into tonight on the off night.
Gotcha. All righty. So once again, Pat McCarthy's picks are Browns plus 3.5, Raiders plus 3.5, Bears minus 4. I'll go quickly on my picks right now. Raiders plus 3.5. I'm there with Pat as well. Chiefs laying 5.5, and the Steelers laying 2.5 points. Pat, enjoy the NLDS. We'll be listening to you and also Keith Radd and the great Howie Rose, and also our guy Ack
I'm
well.
Done unless till further notice.
You never know. I hear some things are
never know.
You never know.
Hey, I stay ready like David Peterson coming out of the bullpen, you know?
That's exactly right.
Pat, appreciate it. Thank you.
Zach, anytime, my friend. Thank you.
You got it. There he is, Pat McCarthy, joining us on the show. So I haven't talked to you yet about this game. I've been avoiding you on purpose all day.
So I just thought that was normal, you know, standard operating procedure.
No. What time did you? Well, no, you weren't here yesterday.
No,
You were doing the
post game with Pat. Yeah.
Yeah. So you are here doing the post game upstairs, right?
No. I was at home doing the post.
Oh, you were okay. So mm-hmm. You're at home. Kind of take me through how you processed everything.
I had something ready to go because, look, you're three outs away from the end of the season.
Had the eulogy written.
Yeah, you have no choice. I mean, you have – because, you know, you maybe have 5, maybe 7.5 minutes once that game is done to put the whole season into perspective around that game. So, look, I started to feel a little different after Lindor walked because you just had the feeling – like, you didn't necessarily think it was going to play out the way it did – but you say, you know, they have a chance here. they have a chance to get something going. You have the tying run at the plate, one swing, and especially the way the Mets have played this year, all it takes is one swing. So it's a 2-0 game at that point. But I was ready, and my part of my lead was the Mets' success this year was a microcosm of their season, as was their shortcomings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, squandering opportunities that put them in the position they were in the final week and final day of the season. And the other part of it is you look at so many pitchers on their pitching staff, they're free agents to be, and obviously Pete Alonso. So, you know, what's the future like, even though you kind of have some faith in what David Stearns has done so far?
So I'll make an admission, and I did something last night that I've never done before. I usually wait for the game to end to use my commentary to get it out on social media. But when it was 2-0, I was so down in the dumps. And, you know, I was, you know, in the eighth inning I did this. You know, in between the top of the eighth and the bottom of the eighth.
Yep.
I just recorded like a quick 45-second video, which so I had it ready to go when the game ended so I could put it out on my Twitter page. And it was like Quintana showed up, Lindor showed up as he has all season long. But outside of that, and I did the – oh, my God. You know, play off the whole OMG thing. It was a disaster for everybody else. And as much as I love Pete Alonso, I said this in the video, he kind of showed you why he shouldn't be brought back at a ridiculous price tag, and he's expendable. And then I talked about how it was a positive season and that they're going to build from here and Steve Cohen will go out there and spend. I had that video recorded. And then...
did it make air?
No.
Did it slip out somewhere?
It was in the drafts. Yeah. It was in the drafts. It was stashed in the drafts. And then, to your point, you said you got excited when Lindor got on. When Lindor got on, I said, okay, good job.
Yeah, I would, you know, I just felt that point, you know, you lead off walk and two out walks are just the worst.
When Nimmo, because of how many times either in game two or three they had guys on base and they couldn't get them home, when Nimmo hit that ball and they were first and third, I'm like, all right, it's first and third, one out. I didn't think they were going to win. I didn't even think they were going to tie it, but it enters your mind. If Nimmo steals and gets the second with one out, you just need a single to tie the game, and at least they have life. So I went from being buried in my couch to at the edge of my seat.
Well, the other thing, too, to your
point. And that's what I started to believe.
To your point, when you have first and third, number one, you're with the guy on third, you're not going to put one in the dirt because if it gets away.
Yeah, you're going to get something to hit.
One run comes home. And Nimmo on first base is a very good base runner and has speed. So if there's something close, you know he's going.
Did you see the John Boy whole mashup online?
On Devin Williams?
Yeah.
I didn't get a I saw parts of it, but I was looking for more.
So I watched the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
You see some people in the Mets dugout talking and saying stuff to Pete and things like that. I guess the whole video, I watched the entire thing. The off-speed pitch, it was either higher or lower in his glove. I forget what it was, but it was obvious that the glove was like, it looked bigger for one of the other was fastball or off-speed. And I think the Mets kind of, even though it was so small and like, I'm watching, I'm like, how the heck can anyone catch on to this? It seems so incremental.
That always amazes me.
But it's that little thing. And then you see John Boy who reads the lips, like in the dugouts, some guy walked up to Pete and he was like, he went like this. He raised his hand and lowers his hand, and it kind of lines up with what he's saying. I don't know if it's true, but it makes sense to me.
Tipping the pitches
a little bit.
I'm always amazed at the subtle nuances that teams can pick up about guys tipping pitches.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. But speaking of incredible, what an incredible finish.
It is. So you've been doing – that's why you haven't been here for a lot of the week. You've been doing the pre and the post.
Part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
And what happens now? Just no NLDS?
My contributions are based on whether or not they're like when they leave town. So on getaway days, they have to leave so quickly. There's not enough time to finish the post game show. That's why I take over those duties. Mm-hmm. But in this case, on Monday and yesterday, Pat was going to be in the locker room, so they needed somebody to
an anchor.
Yeah, they need kind of somebody to go back and forth.
I'm going to go to bat for you, Ack. I'm going to go scream at Ray Martell and say, let's go. Home games, get access to the stadium.
I've been at a couple home games this year. I mean, that's on getaway days, but still.
If you recall, there was, I think the last time the Mets were in the postseason, our buddy Ryan Hickey's parents.
That's right. We met at Citi Field.
We're huge fans and are huge fans of Ack, that they were kind of fanboy and fangirling over Richard Ackerman in inside of the stadium.
I was the third Hickey child.
Hey, some of the vacations they go on that side of
that's
idea.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm bucking for.
All righty. We'll come on back with a news brief to wrap up shop. It is the Zach Gelb Show. Update time. Here he is, the Ackman, Rich Ackerman.